Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. You've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Hi, and welcome to How's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight we're tackling a legal topics episode, and our story that we're going to discuss tonight is how many steps do you need to buy a home? And here, as always, is our host, Robert Howe.
Well, welcome everyone to How's New York. Again, I am your host, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community politics, and any hot topics of the day. As you know, we're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. And as Jason mentioned, tonight is a legal topic show, and we're going to talk about the variety of steps you may want to consider before buying a house. So, Jason, let me tell you, where would you start off in your house hunting endeavors?
Well, this is a topic that we've addressed before recently when we discussed, you know, what you need to do to kind of get yourself in order before you buy. And this particular story from Realtor.com jumped out at me because it shows the home buying process in 10 simple steps, which I thought seemed like a lot, and maybe some of them were unnecessary. But for me, I would think that the first step you would undertake would be to probably get your own finances in order and see what loan you'd be approved for.
Well, although that's a very prudent, fiscally responsible, concern, one thing that you said is you didn't think you needed 10 steps. I think you need more steps, and the word simple should not be in there because none of this is simple. Now, I've always dispensed this advice. The first step before buying a house is you should look at the neighborhood that you're buying in. And this is a very simple thought, but one I don't think too many people ever follow for one reason or another. So what I mean by that is, if I were going to buy a house, say, in the middle of the block in some various community, maybe during the day I would go out to that community and park. I'd walk around the streets to make sure maybe there are no abandoned buildings, nobody that has a chicken coop in the backyard raising pit bulls that are barking at me through metal fences. Maybe I go into the local delicatessen or diner or bar, sit down, look around, see the type of people that, you know, are frequenting the place. And then maybe I come back at night to see what goes on the block. How's the parking? Who's out on the street? Are the people who are out on the street desirable or undesirable? You know, every now and then a certain spot in a neighborhood becomes the spot where all the kids meet. And that's not to necessarily say the kids are bad, but do you really want teenagers hanging outside your house, you know, creating a ruckus? If it's been determined over the years that, you know, your block is the block to hang out on. So I think that's the first initial step that I would take. And maybe I'd also look in some of the local papers to see what some of the issues are in the community. Are they going to put a waste transfer station down the block from you? Are they going to close the subway station, as we are experiencing on the R train in Bay Ridge? Or are they going to close down the whole line, as they are in places like Williamsburg and Greenpoint, you know, closing down the whole, I think, the L train service for about a year? You know, what do the local papers say about crime? Are there drug arrests every night? Are cars being broken into? Are houses being broken into? Or do they consider, you know, their community a safe spot? So I think you have to get a feel for the community, or if you've lived in the community all your life, you have that feel already. But if you're moving into a community, I would hang out there for a while and make sure that the housing stock, the people, the businesses, the young people, the old people, the middle-aged people, are all the type of people that I would feel comfortable being with. What is your
thought? That's a really good point. I you know, as you mentioned, that people never really think of, I am one of those people. I never thought about that as I think back on when we bought our apartment. You usually come and see the place, and then you kind of just imagine, well, that's the way it is all the time. I never really thought about doing any extra reconnaissance at maybe some off-peak hours, or maybe, you know, come back two or three times before actually saying, hey, this is the place.
Yeah, well, think about it. You're plucking down anywhere from several hundred thousand to over $1 million for a property that you probably have only seen for at most a half an hour. And then, maybe you go back with the engineer, maybe you go back with your relative, so maybe a whole hour or so you've seen, you know, this house, and, you know, you fall in love with the inside of the house. But what happens if you have one of those neighbors, say you share a driveway, and you have one of those neighbors that decides to put a fence down the middle of your shared driveway, or the house on the other side has a kid that has a young rock band, heavy metal rock band, that practices in their basement every evening. You know, this sounds very simple, but nobody does it. You'll move into a $1 million house without really knowing who your neighbors are. Maybe your neighbor just got out of jail for and is a level 3 sex offender. It's very odd how people fall in love with the house, that 20 by 100 square lot of property, and really never look a couple feet one way or the other. But so having said that, that's my two cents on the missing step that's always in home buying. But let's look at Realtor.com. Their first step is saying to choose an agent. And yes, so you should probably try to locate a real estate agent who has some experience, is familiar with the neighborhood. You might not want to get a broker that's from one county in order to buy a house in another county. They may not have any local knowledge of things that are going on in the community. You also want to get a veteran real estate broker. It's not to say everyone has to have a start somewhere. No one has a lawyer. You know, when I first started out, I was doing things for the first time a lot of times. But I might not hire me if I knew this was the first or second time that I was doing something. I'd want, a broker that had some experience. Probably also want a broker that has some credentials along with their, license that have gone on for extra studies and, hold themselves to higher standards in the real estate business. I talked about you'd want a full-time person, not a part-time person, preferably. And your personality also has to jive with the broker. There has to be some sort of empathy between both of you that you know that they know what you're looking for. Is there anything that I'm missing in a broker that you would want to look for?
No, I think you're touching on all the important qualities that someone would want in a broker. I can't imagine getting into a real professional relationship with a broker who had less than those checkpoints.
Yes, exactly. So number two, then, it says, find a lender. And this kind of dovetails with what you're talking about. You would check your own finances to make sure that you could really afford it. Maybe go on the internet and put in, I earn $50,000 a year. What can I buy with a salary of $50,000? And there are programs and schedules that'll come up with the range of prices that you can afford, and that also goes for what the lender will do for you. Once again, similar to a real estate broker, you want to find a lender who's experienced. You want to find a lender that lends in the area. Once again, sounds very simple, but you might not want to go on the internet and get a lender that's out in California. You probably might want a lender whose office you can walk into, say hello to them, see them see you, drop off papers, stop in every now and then, what's up, do you need anything, am I missing anything? So you want someone local who knows the local market, and that broker will probably, that mortgage broker will probably check your credit and issue you a pre-approval letter. In the old days, people were lent money. Credit was given by banks depending on your relationship with the vice president or the manager of the bank. Those days are pretty much long gone. Lending is done according to formulas and computer programs and percentages and things of that nature. And, the biggest thing that is your credit score. I don't know if you've dealt with a mortgage broker or thought what qualities you would want in a mortgage broker. Is there anything that I'm missing?
Well, the last time I did, it was before all the new regulations and all. It was not so much the relationship based on a personal relationship, but There was they just asked you for some questions. You filled out some paperwork, and they pretty much could tell you, sure, here, you're approved for this much or that much. And usually, from my experience, it wasn't too painful. And now I imagine that it's quite a different animal. But I would think that having that pre-approval is something that would be high on any checklist for in terms of steps. And not only that, but it also will help you out probably in future steps on what, when you do have your broker and the money that you can spend, where you're going to choose, the places you're going to choose, and making your wish list of homes.
You know, pre-approval now is so standard that it's almost like you need a certain type of degree. Say you need a college degree before you can get a job. It's almost like a standard operating procedure. Mm-hmm. And as you, but of course, the more standard it becomes, the more diluted it is if everybody has a pre-approval, because pre-approval basically means that you don't have any terrible credit things lurking around. There's still about probably 5 or 6 more things that you would have to show to get to the next level, and then ultimately the next level, which is a commitment letter says, you know, dear Mr. Versace, we're happy to lend you $500,000 based upon your application. But the more pre-approvals that are out there, you know, it dilutes, and like most things that get diluted, people say, show me more, I want to see a little more. But you do make a good point. Several years ago, before the credit crisis, if you had a heartbeat, they would give you money. Now you need a heartbeat and a ton of paperwork and explanations, and paperwork is only good for certain. Yes, exactly. Paperwork is only good for a certain amount of time, and then you have to get all new documents. You heard the word documents are expiring, and so it has, you know, the tolerances have become, you know, much tighter. Now, the next thing that Realtor.com talks about is clean up your credit, and they put this as step number 3. Probably you would think, you know, after saying that you see if your finances were in order, cleaning up your credit probably should be an early question, maybe earlier than step 3. Obviously, if you have horrible credit, you're never going to get a loan. If you want to boost your credit up a little, probably cleaning up your credit, paying down some cards, not taking any new credit out just before you make your application, not leasing cars, you know, those sorts of things will help you stabilize and/or occur to you to clean up your credit before you went house hunting.
It hadn't the first time, but since we've covered this topic in a few different ways and had some shows and videos on it, it's one of the first things I would tackle the next go around is making sure that if that's something that I was going to do, maybe I would 6 months, 8 months in advance, I'd be cleaning it up and polishing it and getting it as pristine as I could.
Yes, it's almost like going for a job interview. You know, obviously you get a haircut, mm-hmm. you shave, put on a clean suit and a shirt, and put your best foot forward. Same thing with your credit. You don't want to be wearing that nice shiny suit, and they do your credit report and comes out to be like a 300, and you have you know, horrible credit and late payments and defaults and foreclosures and liens and judgments against you. So it's, you know, you got to put your best foot forward. You only have one time to make a good impression. Now, the fourth step is to apply for mortgage pre-approval, which we pretty much covered with, you know, getting, you know, finding a lender. That pre-approval letter usually says you've been pre-approved to buy a house up to the amount of such and such, or we will lend you money up to the limit of such and such. So that kind of gives you, you know, parameters of what types of neighborhoods or houses, you know, you're looking at. Next is a good one, a wish list. Create a home wish list. We see these on some of these cable shows. I don't know if they have the wish list before they start their house hunting. Maybe some do, but ultimately, after you've seen three or four houses, I guess you make a list of the pros and cons of each one and then weigh them out and make your decision according to that. What would be on your wish list if you were buying a house tomorrow, Jason?
Definitely storage, square footage, lot size would be one, the yard. So all those things would be probably the real deal breakers.
Yeah, size does matter, and closets do matter, and storage does matter, because all we do is accumulate. You certainly don't end up 10 years later with less stuff than you did when you first started out. So storage, closets, and you want to get bigger also. You don't want to make a lateral move and get the same square footage, maybe no outside space. So you really want to, you know, make sure you you nail that down to that. That's probably high on your wish list. Now, some people, the Williamsburg folks, want the L train. And, you know, maybe some people don't want to be by the train. Maybe they want to be in a two-fare zone, those people who may not travel, you know, to Manhattan might not care about trains all that much. I want to be as far away from that as possible. Of course, on the Williamsburg route, most people work downtown Brooklyn or in Manhattan, so the train to them is very important. Then I guess Realtor.com says number six, search the listing. So I guess by now, though, you've probably gone on some of the websites, walked the avenues and passed by real estate offices, which still has pictures in their window the old-fashioned way. You know, it's very enticing. It's a nice Saturday afternoon thing to do. We look at these beautiful pictures of interiors or exteriors of homes and, you know, what they're selling for. Where would you start your search? Newspapers, walking around, or the Internet?
Well, as we've covered before, the technological advances, especially in the real estate industry, have really given people little reason to start anywhere else than online. The amount of information, the amount of things you can see, if you're going to make a wish list and list five properties and check them off based on that, you could have it all at your fingertips, right on your laptop or even your mobile device. And my wife sends me listings all the time, and I'm looking at them, scanning reading the schematics, and then looking at pictures on my phone. So I would definitely go right to the Internet.
Let's go to the Internet, as they say. Who said, let's go to the videotape? Now it's,
digital.
let's go to the Internet, yes. So then, you start making offers. That's step number seven. And there probably will be some negotiation going back and forth between you and the seller. Seller wants top dollar. You want bottom dollar. You arrive at some figure that's a little painful for you, more than you wanted, a little less than the seller wanted to accept, but at least you have the makings of a deal. And you probably at this point bring in a home inspector, engineer in New York. They should be licensed, and they will check, you know, the roof, the plumbing, the heating, the structure, the foundation, all the big six things that an inspector should check to give you some peace of mind as to the property you're buying. Also probably do a termite search to make sure that there are no termites lurking in your basement. Many times people come back after the engineer's inspection. The buyers will come back and say, well, you know, we didn't realize that this was old, or there was a crack, or this isn't working, or this is going to be replaced. And they may say to the seller, knock X amount of dollars off. the seller may say, well, I'm not going to knock any off because this is why I priced the house at that amount. If it was perfect, I'd get another $10,000 or $20,000 on top of it. But look, let's to make a deal, you say there are 10 things wrong and it's $5,000. I say there are 5 things wrong. I'll fix 6 and 7, 8, 9, and 10 you don't have to worry about. And maybe I'll give you $3,000 as a credit and you all agree and then move on to the next step of getting your so once you have your pre-approval, then you go back to the bank and you start working towards getting your commitment because now you have a property that the bank is going to look at, do an inspection and an appraisal, not so much an inspection, more of an appraisal to see, you know, what the value of the house is. But, you know, they left one spot out of here. They forgot about the lawyer. How could they have done that, Jason? That's me. But so maybe step 7A maybe should be, you know, find a lawyer who does a substantial amount of real estate and consult them. And maybe we shouldn't even be 7A. Maybe we should be early on. I know every now and then I get consulted by clients who say, I'm buying or selling in the next month or so, but I just want to touch base and have my team assembled. And the team, of course, should be the real estate broker, the mortgage broker, the attorney, the inspector, and you pretty much have your, you know, your team all set up. Probably want to, you know, your real insurance broker there to know how much your insurance is going to cost. Maybe have a plumber or electrician also on your team. Maybe they want to go in and check systems, the plumbing systems, and things like that. So I think probably assembling your team should be a little further up the line. Of course, this is probably written by, well, it's realtor.com, so it's realtor-centric. That's why they have number one, choose your agent. I guess if it was lawyer.com, they'd say choose your lawyer. But in any event, you should have your team, you know, set up.
I was thinking something along those lines, too, when I was looking at the list, and not to skip ahead, but the step 9 is do your due diligence. I kind of included having a real estate attorney in with that and having your due diligence done way sooner than 9. So I thought maybe that was something that was a little out of whack.
Yes, you know, right. The attorney will kind of pull all of the issues together, the inspection issues, the financing issues, the building issues, the inspection issues, although, you know, lawyers are not inspectors, but, you know, they do have some familiarity with issues that pop up. And right, so I think the total assemble your team should have been earlier. But in any event, you would end up after your offer was accepted and you did your engineer's inspection. You would have to at this point retain an attorney. On the buyer's side, the attorney would review the contract, have you sign, obtain a deposit check from you, send that off, and then the attorney would also order your title search and a survey of a property. Title search meaning make sure that the people who are selling it really own it, that there are no other people's names on the deed, and that after closing you'll own this free and clear, but for the new mortgage that your bank will be putting on. Number 10 is sort of self-explanatory, attend the closing.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, yeah, you and your attorney will show up at the closing and your any good real estate attorney will have prepared you for what is going to happen, what you need, and who's doing what. So, but that is certainly, you know, a given that you have to end up, you know, at the closing. I do see that the author of the article, Margaret Hindry, is a Brooklyn native, so that's a good thing. And she gives some good steps. May have missed the attorney. We'll forgive her for that. Or maybe won't forgive her for that. But in any event, those are the 10-plus steps you probably anybody would need. The 10 not so simple, the 10-plus not so simple steps to home buying process.
And with that, we're at the end of our Legal Topics episode. And Bob, why don't you take us out?
Well, this was a good topic, and you know, we spoke about it for, you know, good half hour. This does conclude our tonight's radio program, and thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And our legal topic was 10 plus not so simple steps in the home buying process. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn.